you're a praying man, I'd start.
Look, sister.
Don't sister me. Get the hell up. What are you and what are you doing here?
I don't know what I am or where. Maybe I died. What is it that they call me?
Pathetic?
No. A free Jack.
Holy shit.
Nobody looks abused. I was highly amused. Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies in all their splendiferous glory and a presentation of Prismatic Tsunami. My name is Eric. Thank you for joining us today. We have a great show planned for you. To get things started, I'm going to go ahead and introduce the panel. Over here, he's been dead for a day and a half all day. What's the big deal? It's Richard.
Hey, where's the waitress? Because I'm pretty sure I did not order a Jaggermeister.
Oh, I'm sure you did, actually. Everybody did. She too gets chills when she hears the Jagger say, "Get the meat." It's Vanessa.
I like it. I'll take it.
Probably the wrong kind of chills, but you never know.
Yeah.
No. You eat your river rat with a side of fava beans and a nice Chianti. It's Jason.
I see 5 gold stars and I want to paint them black.
Oh, dude. And finally, and you probably will. Joke's on you, buddy. We never dream of putting up with a society where everyone is assigned a personal ID number that's always used to prove you are who you say. Oh, wait a minute. It's the kid.
What?
Was that it?
As we all go silent and stare at you.
If someone could bring down the excitement levels, that'd be great.
Oh, my God. I would, but we're covering Free Jack.
Yeah. I saw the movie.
I was going to say, I remember this. It's a movie about a race car driver who gets turned into a robot. Oh, wait.
No, I don't think
that would have been a bad
movie. Doom Patrol. Yeah, good call.
This wasn't a bad movie.
No, I love Free Jack. Are you kidding me?
I didn't say I loved it, but it wasn't a bad movie.
No, I said I loved it. Anybody else
could have
said
it. How can you say that Free Jack is not a bad movie?
No, yeah, I actually kind of have to agree with Jason.
Free Jack is a horrible movie. It's fun to watch, but God, is it a bad movie.
Which is the definition of a great movie for our show.
See,
I feel like the term is dated.
If it's fun to me, I can't call it a bad movie. It was a fun movie.
It was fun. I think it was a great deal.
There is a subclass of bad movies that are great bad movies.
So it's the bad watchable movies.
They're still bad movies.
You're saying they're objectively bad movies.
They're objectively bad movies, but they're fun to watch.
All the actors in this film, I found it both enjoyable and very annoying to watch them act. And it's a weird combination because I loved what they were doing, but I cringed the whole time and I didn't know why.
There were a whole lot of named actors in this movie that were big when it came out.
And are great at what they do.
And are marvelous actors. And somehow Mick Jagger is the most charismatic on the screen.
He was the best one.
One thing you can count on from now until Kingdom Come is never understanding why. Yes, this was a great cast. This was a fantastic cast. Yeah, but I wasn't going to talk like him. Let's talk about Free Jack. Rated R, came out in January of 1992.
Does that mean we can curse?
No.
We need to strap the fuck in, yes.
Vanessa can. The rest of you will talk.
That was our one.
Ooh, one so that would have been PG-13. R, we can get another one in there. Runtime of 1 hour and 50 minutes, so not terribly long for how much story they tried to pack into a relatively little story movie.
Was that only 1 hour and 15 minutes?
50. 50. 50. 50.
Oh,
50. Okay, I was going to say it felt a lot longer.
110 minutes.
It still felt longer than that. But
that's too much math. Bounty hunters from the future transport a doomed race car driver to New York City in 2009, where his mind will be replaced with that of a dead billionaire. Boom. Nailed it.
Succinct. To the point.
I think we're good.
Yeah.
IMDb did it right this time. Directed by Jeff Murphy. We haven't seen a whole lot of Jeff Murphy in our lives. He did some directing at the time, though. He did Young Guns 2, which started Emilio Estevez. a couple years before this. He did Under Siege 2, which is the only Under Siege that anybody actually remembered.
That movie with Steven Seagal in it?
It has the distinction of being that movie.
Was better than Under Siege on a Train.
But Under Siege on the Train was one everybody remembered for some reason.
I enjoyed the Train.
It was like,
one.
I think because
I
the first
say
one.
There wasn't anything.
I think because the first one was me good. There were two movies with Steven Seagal in them. Because I'm not buying it.
There are
it's
a
one
lot
movie,
more
they
than
just
that.
Keep relabeling it with different names.
Oh, okay.
That's
more
the,
believable.
Yeah, I was going to say there was Under Siege. There was Under Siege 2. And then there was, what is it? I don't know. Above the Ground Law. Breaker.
It was Under Hunter. Siege with a different name on it.
Yeah, I don't know.
It can only have two verb words.
Oh, is that it? It's the Van Damme premise. I forget about that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, who's that?
He's the other guy with the other movie that's 20 movies.
He's the one that could do the splits.
Oh, that was Steven Seagal without being Steven Seagal. That guy.
Steven Seagal with a mullet.
You know, that's not fair, though.
And the butt.
JCVD is actually kind of cool.
French Steven
so,
Seagal?
So was Steven Seagal in some movies.
He was then. He's not so cool now.
I like Bayou Cop Steven Seagal.
Oh, my God. Okay. Anyway, this is not a Seagal movie. We could talk about him on some other film.
Oh, I guess
we
actually have to talk
plan
about
on
this
watching
movie.
Steven Seagal movies?
I don't have them
there's
on the list.
There's suggestion that there's more than
don't
one of
say
those.
Don't say a pearl.
Don't do that. Okay, let's see.
Just one.
Written by Stephen Pressfield. Now, his distinctions included Above the Law, which was a Steven Seagal movie. The other Steven Seagal movie.
Anyway,
okay, they're worth
right back in.
Can't win.
Which I think came out before this. And he wrote King Kong Lives. He was a writer for King Kong Lives. Do you remember that one?
Is that the one with the monkey?
Yes, it was the one with the... No, it was an ape.
I was going to say, none of them are monkeys.
In this crowd,
guess who's
going to
kick your ass, buddy?
Yeah, we don't do that in this crowd.
I said that for irony.
Yeah, which came out in like 86 or something. I mean, I didn't find much after this that he was known for. Ronald Shusett, who apparently was who brought in to do some like later directing and stuff too, also has writing credit on it. Now, he's a little, I was going to say he's a more familiar name. The name isn't going to be familiar to you guys probably, but he's responsible for the Alien franchise. He was a writer on Alien, and so he's credited on every single Alien movie as a story concept guy.
That movie literally plays in my bedroom every night, every single
I was wondering
night.
What you guys were doing in there.
It's how my wife goes to sleep.
Which movie was this?
I'm not going to comment. Okay, Total Recall. Alien. He also did Total Recall, the Arnie version that came out.
Oh, I liked that version.
Yep. Mm. Have you guys seen the remake of that?
Haven't.
No.
I've seen the Arnie version.
Yeah. It's a very different movie, so it actually is worth watching.
I thought about watching the remake, and then I just watched the original again.
Well, they're nothing alike. Nothing alike at
except
all.
For the title, which annoys me, and it would annoy me even more if I went to watch it, and it's nothing like what it is.
Well, the premise that gave the title its name is still there, and what it is the new movie is based on the actual story that the original Arnie movie was loosely referencing, like they do.
Wait, what?
So, for example, in the Philip K. Dick novel for Total Recall, or I can't remember if that's the actual name of the book. I think it is. They don't go to Mars. There's no Mars. That's not a part of the story at all. When they're making the movie in the 90s, they're like, you know, that's just not interesting. Let's do Mars. That'll be more interesting. We could be outlandish and weird and have three breasts.
No, that's still in the book.
I don't see the problem with that.
I don't think that's still in the book.
I guarantee you there are at least three breasts in the book.
And see Dan Gilroy, who we've seen actually one of his writing credits here on the show before. He was one of the writers on Real Steel.
Ooh,
we did that one, didn't we?
Movie. That was a good movie.
I just realized I spelled it Steel, STEAL.
I would be afraid of spelling real wrong. There's right. two words that are easy to
yeah,
mess
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the meanings.
And would mean something completely
the
different.
The meanings are ironic and interesting.
If they had called
In
it
fact,
Real Steel.
If it was Real Steel the other way.
Somebody stole my fishing rod.
I was thinking about movie reel.
Movie reel. Yeah. we're all on that page except you, Richard.
How do we make money off of a movie with very little content? Oh, Hugh Jackman. Good idea.
Yeah.
It's a real steal.
The book is actually Piers Anthony, not Philip K. Dick.
Was it Anthony? Okay. Anyway, it's got that noir-y kind of quality to it that made me think it was Dick. But yeah.
Did you say Piers Anthony?
Piers Anthony. Yep. That's the guy.
That was cute. That is exactly what I said.
That was cute.
And this was, and going back to Free Jack, you guys don't mind?
Is it sure. okay if I talk about Free Jack?
I guess if we
is
have.
Is that to. What we're here for?
God, you people.
I forgot again.
Loosely.
Waterworld.
Why do we do this
great
show?
Great movie.
Why do we do this?
Because it's so much fun.
I keep zapping my brain and forgetting everything.
Loosely based on the 1959 science fiction novel. God, you people. Immortality Inc. by Robert Sheckley. There, I got it out. Nobody saw it. And speaking of the music, Trevor Jones did the music.
The music was good for this movie. I enjoyed this.
Well, we're talking about Trevor Jones. We're talking Trevor Labyrinth, Dark Crystal, Excalibur, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Jones. I mean,
it wasn't that good.
And that explains why I liked the music. You phoned it in. Because I like all of those.
Oh,
I love all of those.
That's what happened.
I don't think the music in this lived up to those. I'm not going to buy the Free Jack soundtrack. I own Labyrinth and
in comparison, he phoned this one in. Got it.
I didn't particularly notice the music when I was watching this, which is usually a sign that it's decent, because if it's bad, it catches my attention. Yeah. But shortly after watching this movie, we watched Knight Rider 2000.
Why?
Yeah. My wife had never seen it, and I had forgotten that I had.
Did she just randomly run across it or something and go, this is interesting. We like this guy in Germany.
We were both huge fans of Knight Rider back in the late 80s, early 90s. You know,
yeah, I was too. I still never subjected myself to
it. And she didn't realize that they had made a
reboot. There's a reason she didn't realize that.
Right, and I had managed to block it out. Well, I mention all of this just to say that, so we watched it, and the music was so bloody awful from beginning to end that it retroactively made me feel like the movie in Free Jack was bad, which is completely unfair because it wasn't. So just throwing that out there. Give me just a moment. Let me reset my microphone here.
Don't throw the stand out there.
Just throwing that out there. There.
Something that I will say about the music is the closed captioning was great, and it made me notice the music. Because instead of just putting little music notes on the screen when it was quiet,
like they sometimes
it would
do.
Go dramatic music.
Yeah.
I did notice that.
Suspenseful music. Eerie music. And I was like,
you know what, though?
It's nice when
now that you mentioned
to do that.
This movie did have dramatic, suspenseful, eerie music in it.
But it told me what kind of music it was, and I was like, now I know what I can expect.
Now you know what I'm supposed to be feeling here. But there was also, I mean, again, dated, very dated. I mean, this was 92, and the music could have been 5 years earlier. It had a very kind of some electronic kind of stuff on it.
Came out.
Had some weirdly sax. I mean, there's a place there where I was like, because Rene Russo was going to be in Lethal Weapon, they thought, let's go ahead and make a Lethal Weapon sounding bit here. I don't know what they were going for. It was like nothing was consistent. I like Trevor Jones. He does some great work.
He does some great stuff, but this
was not it.
This was not on.
I really liked the music. It was not a down point at all for me.
So the only place where it actually jumped out at me as something I would have called problematic, interestingly, despite all that, because those things that I'm talking about, they super fit. They're cliche 80s kind of vibes, but they super fit. The one part was when our hero here, if you will, victim, I don't know what you call him. When Alex and Julie are, you know, in her apartment or in the safe house, and you notice that the romantic vibe is supposed to be building, the music does get there, but it like takes several seconds too long. And so like what I'm hearing at that moment, and this is probably particularly poignant to me again because I'm pulling clips, so I'm listening very closely to things. And so the music is sounding kind of chill, eerie and creepy still. And they're looking into each other's eyes. I'm saying, what vibe are they going for? And then it starts kind of the pretty melodic romantic. Like,
I do remember that, actually. The fact that I remember that means that they timed it weird.
Yeah, there was a little element there. But other than that, it was fine. It didn't jump out at me. Interestingly enough, no Jagger music in this. Look at that. We got to talk about him. So this was an Emilio Estevez flick. Emilio was, he was a Brat Pack kind of holdover. He was somebody that was known, a known quantity, so he wasn't a bad choice for casting. But at this time, when this movie came out, this genre of film, there was no traction for this in Hollywood. And moviegoers did not flock to these kinds of movies. You know, the only way that they were, I was talking to Kid about this on the way up, because I shared this article with you guys in the thread that we have, where I was reading somebody's take on this. I thought this was interesting. The only place, the only way that they got movies of a more kind of cerebral sci-fi sort of construct to go, you know, into the front of audiences was to put major star power in them, like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Total Recall. You know, that's the way they were doing it at the time. Otherwise, nobody would have gone and seen these movies. And I did go to Total Recall when it was in the theater, and I wanted to see it because Arnie was in it. You know, everybody loved Arnie then, or you know, more or less. But Emilio Estevez, not that kind of star power. You know,
I liked it. Also, have Anthony Hopkins.
But well, okay,
and
but
Jagger.
We got to talk about that. Like, I realize I usually break this down and go like one person at a time. But these are people who are well known to us, and they had plenty of roles before this. But they weren't part of the pop culture zeitgeist as strongly at the time, except for very specific things.
That's true.
Now, Emilio Estevez had done the Brat Pack stuff, like, you know, Breakfast Club and all that. But he also had done Young Guns 2 just 2 years before this. And so his star was high for a minute. And it's starting to fade right at this point because he didn't really do anything noticeable. He did the Mighty Ducks the same year as this. Let's put it that way. You know, and the Mighty Ducks, for younger anybody younger than us, the Mighty Ducks is all anybody remembers.
The Mighty Ducks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I knew Emilio Estevez from.
There's
you never seen The Breakfast Club? Holy crap.
No,
I've never seen Breakfast
she has
Club.
Not.
There's a movie called The Mighty Ducks.
Yes, it even has a sequel, D2.
How have good you Lord. Not
it's just 2 years after The Mighty Ducks? Sure.
Oh yeah, there's like 17 of them.
Is Donald in it? Daffy?
No. Kid, you no. have it's, to see oh my God, The Mighty man. Ducks.
It's a hockey. It's hockey. A kids in a hockey thing.
It's a hockey thing.
It's Bad News Bears with ice hockey.
You'll yeah. like
oh,
it.
My.
I swear,
but better than I liked it better than Bad News Bears. But Bad News Bears is further
Estevez
back.
Instead
so.
Of Walter Matthau.
Oh Lord. Okay. Sorry. Moving.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. It is what it is. I guess that we shouldn't necessarily extol the virtues all that degree since we're not talking about that on this show.
I don't.
We're going to talk about Free Jack, which
I don't get into sports movies.
Right? Not a better movie than Mighty Ducks, but
you're taking us back to that.
It came
movie.
Out at the right time where I had to watch it because my brother wanted to watch it.
That's fair.
I can't. Yeah. Can't put that down.
I would have put the Mighty Ducks at least 4 or 5 years after this,
right?
Because I thought Emilio Estevez was old and grizzled and
oh god, no,
and
no, not when the first one came out.
Of course,
wow.
This movie came out. I thought 40 was ancient, like
that's
positively
true.
Ancient.
That's true.
That's true.
I yeah. was 12 when I saw the Mighty Ducks.
So Emilio had first billing, but Mick Jagger had second billing on this. Now,
he plays a big part in this movie.
Here's the funny thing. And you hadn't seen this before, I assume.
Oh, gosh, no.
Okay. Everybody else had, right?
No.
Oh, Richard. Oh, this is your first viewing?
Yes.
Okay. Curious about your hot take on that. Mick Jagger, I remembered him being in this. I even remember Vicendic. I remembered his name because it was so interesting, and I like cool names. I remembered him being like the crony, the henchman or whatever, who had a couple of important bits. I did not remember he was all over this goddamn movie.
Oh, he's all over this movie.
He is. I mean, he has as many lines as Alex Furlong, I'm pretty sure.
At least.
And he was surprisingly great in this role.
Is it wrong that I keep getting him confused with Steve Tyler?
Yes.
That's, I'm
it's the lips.
It's lips.
Because
David
I want
Bowie was
to make him MVP,
with.
But I think he was too
Dave
much
Bowie.
Of a principal
it's
character.
It's got to be the package.
I'm trying to. I don't know who to answer. There's too many things happening in the room right now.
Sorry.
There's too much crossfire.
Jason, try.
It's okay to mess up Mick Jagger and Steven Tyler. It is not okay to mess up Mick Jagger and David Bowie.
Although they did do a video together.
Exactly. They did a video together. That's why
it was awesome.
Confused me.
One of my favorites of all time.
All the more reason not to confuse them.
Yeah, they were in the same place at the same time.
They look almost exactly the same in the video they did together.
She's looking at the package. I'm just saying.
No, I promise I'm not.
Potpourri.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure Mick has a few years on David. A few.
They're close.
Well.
Yeah, but one of them's dead and one of them's not.
The older one's still alive. You know, God, Mick Jagger didn't look young in this.
No, he did not.
No.
And this, I mean, well, this is early 90s, right?
Yeah.
Is it?
92.
Something like that. Yeah, this was 29 years ago. 29 years. The movie takes place in 2009.
The movie takes place
the future, the
ago.
Distant future of 2009.
With vid phones.
Yes. Yes.
That
yes.
look like oh, payphones with video screens oh, on them. All over the
they
place.
Can scan everything without your permission.
Oh, my.
That God. Was our idea of what phones would be like in the future. We thought they'd still be connected to walls before
I
we had
remember,
video phones.
Because like 92, because we were, when they were filming this, we were in high school.
Yeah.
Kid and I. And so I'm trying to remember, I think it was around that period that we started seeing, like, not on like TV, but like you'd see like a talk show where somebody is showing off their new VidPhone thing, you know, or it would showcase in a, I just remember seeing them somewhere on TV and they were terrible.
They were putting them in watches.
Oh, that was science fiction still. I'm pretty sure that was science fiction.
I'm pretty sure I remember.
You didn't have wireless video, sir.
I'm pretty sure I remember seeing a video phone watch in popular mechanics.
In the early 90s?
Oh, yeah. Yes. No, they had some early models, but they were really slow and really sketchy and had very bad bandwidth. And the smaller screen actually helped.
They were predicting
let me remind you that
was going to be a thing.
Let me remind you that the cellular phone at the time was still a bag phone that attached in a car, and it was huge.
Yes.
And it required the power of the car so you could talk to somebody.
Mine looked like a giant Air Force or Army walkie-talkie.
Why doesn't it surprise me you had one? Let's see.
I'm spoiled.
Mick was great, though. He was offered this movie apparently just a week before shooting the schedule began, and decided to do it on the spot based on a short description of the plot. Also said that if he'd been given a few months to read the script and think about it, he probably would have declined. that's interesting. Also, I read somewhere that Anthony Hopkins has stated that the only reason he took a role in Free Jack was because he'd always wanted to meet Mick Jagger. And coincidentally, many sources say the reverse was the only reason Jagger took the role was because producers told him Hopkins was involved. I don't know if I believe that trivia, but I like it.
I like the idea of it.
Yeah. They had like one scene together, I guess. It just wasn't much.
But belongs in my mind canon. I'm good with that.
Yeah. But they did have a scene together. Now, I got to say, the effect stuff within like the spiritual switchboard and stuff looked pretty cool. Not the whole transfer consciousness thing where they got really weird with all the lightning visuals and stuff.
But I actually didn't have a problem with that. I had a problem with the building they were in to get there because there was this horrible green screen to get them in this luxurious room.
Uh-huh.
And as they walk across the hallway, it's this horrible, horrible green screen.
You can definitely tell, yeah. It's awful.
And I'm like, they could have gone to any hotel lobby and filmed this scene.
That would have cost more.
It was so ugly. It was so ugly to get the idea of this building interior. And it was just, it was bad.
All right. Speaking of the other stars, Renee Russo played Julie Redland. I like her and everything.
Yeah, Renee Russo's awesome.
She had just done Major League a couple years before this, and Lethal Weapon 3 came out the same year as Free Jack. And that was our actual introductions kind of to Renee Russo. She hadn't done anything big before that. So, and then she started working pretty regularly after that. Outbreak and Get Shorty, Tin Cup, they all came out in the next few years. So
this was on her way up, and it did not stumble her, which is kudos to Renee Russo.
She met her husband, Dan Gilroy, who was a co-writer of this. The guy that I said, like, Real Steel. He also was a writer on Bourne Legacy, if you guys like the Bourne stuff.
I do like the Bourne stuff.
I am a Bourne fan.
During production here.
Yeah, the first movie.
They've been married ever since 1992.
Well, good for them.
You don't hear that a lot in Hollywood. That's awesome.
No, that's one of my favorite never hear Hollywood stories.
I'm just going to let that hang because that's great. Thanks, kid.
You tried.
Let's see. And then Anthony Hopkins playing McCandless. Silence of the Lambs came out the year before this. Keep that in mind.
Wait, are you serious?
We knew who Anthony Hopkins was largely because of Hannibal Lecter. He'd done roles before that. He wasn't unknown in Hollywood before that. We'd even probably seen him in movies before that. Nobody really paid attention to him in the younger generation that, that is now us, you know, that was younger at the time, until Silence of the Lambs. And this was the next year. I mean,
best actor for a 20-minute scene.
Oh, gosh. So good. This is the same year that Bram Stoker's Dracula came out, too, which I love the contrast of McCandless in this and Van Helsing. There's even some delivery and stuff that almost sounds, it's his way of delivering things. That way he has a talking about a thing that gets, it's like a more contemporary Rex Harrison, right? You know, yeah.
without the
sing-songy quality necessarily, but still that same kind of melodic way that he spoke and delivers a line to where he goes, da, 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 da. He does with Thor, or it does with, Odin.
He's
same way.
He's Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
He has Anthony Hopkins delivery.
He does the same thing in Westworld. He does the same thing in everything.
And what it is?
Oh, I forgot about his role in Westworld. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's his way of trying to make an American accent.
That could be.
Because he's very, very British.
Yeah.
When they interview him, he doesn't sound like that at all. And he's talking and he's very, very British. But when he puts on the American accent, he delivers in the way that
part of the way he learned to do it. Part of the way he trained himself or was trained to do it, and to kind of clip the way he talked in certain, you know, like little segments, little sections.
To be fair, when I see Anthony Hopkins and things, that's how I expect him to talk. If he were to actually talk differently, it would bother me.
there is not enough talk about the Hopkins comma.
Because it doesn't.
We all hear about the Shatner comma and the Walken comma.
Yeah.
But there is the Hopkins comma is highly underappreciated.
The funny thing is, and I realize that, you know, everybody gets a little different as they get older, of course, and he's definitely not young. But you listen to him in interviews where he's just he's not reading from a script, and he's kind of all over the place when he talks. It takes a little while to come up with anything, and it doesn't really say anything. It's very, very British. It's great.
Love him.
He was good. He was fine in this. He definitely was the most classic, you know,
classically trained actor
in the film. You know, it's like, McCandless was a cool character. As a villains go, he was kind of a cool character.
I called the twist.
I love the fact that he was vying for the affections of Rene Russo, and then the two of them got to be Odin and Thor's mom.
Thor's mom.
Why is it? Sorry. The name you were looking for is Frigg.
Frigga, thank you. Yeah. The two of them got to be that together. So all those years later.
He gets
to be married to
Lady, her. First Lord and Lady of Asgard. Yeah. That was pretty cool.
What was the why is that? Why are you spacing out? Your brain was somewhere else entirely, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. So it's because we keep talking about Free Jack.
Well, no, it was the discussion about Anthony Hopkins.
I have like 17 more actors to talk about, by the way.
The casting.
This casting was actually actors, really good.
Oh, no, you'll be surprised.
There's so many more. There are ones that I recognize.
I'll make them quick. You ready to be surprised?
Okay.
All right. We got Jonathan Banks, who played Micolette.
Love Jonathan Banks.
And he was great in this. Nowadays, if you're younger, you may not really know him from a lot of stuff. He does a lot of voice acting, too. He is, in fact, William Murphy on F is for Family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you're younger, you'll know him from everything, just won't know his face.
Yeah, exactly. And he's in Better Call Saul, so he's, you know, still doing regular acting and does a lot of TV stuff. He was a great villain. He's always a great bad guy anyway.
This almost beautiful. Every CSI, Law and Order,
NCIS,
he's a bad guy or at least some kind of antagonist.
Somebody you don't love.
All of them.
Was he in Bones?
Probably. I don't know. Not a regular.
We'd have to. I'm talking 1-2 episode arcs.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he shows up a lot.
Everything. He's the case of the week.
Brad was Buster Poindexter,
which I totally recognized.
Johansson.
Oh, you stole my thunder on that.
I'm sorry.
You were going to talk about David Johansson. I was going to go, that was Buster Poindexter of New York Dolls.
But I mean, that's the thing is, when I see him, that's who I remember him as, is Buster Poindexter.
It's okay. I recognized him from Mr. Nanny.
And we'll see him again in Scrooged when we do it later this month. It looks like we're going to try and do Scrooged.
Yes.
Finally. So,
and we'll see him again.
My favorite Christmas movie.
Amanda Plummer, who I played in the opening as the nun.
My favorite Christmas movie is Die Hard.
Not very. Mine too. Not a lot of people really necessarily knew who Amanda Plummer was at this point. Joe vs. the Volcano a couple years before this. So I Married an Axe Murderer was the year after this.
Didn't we just see her in a movie like not too long ago?
I think so. I remember mentioning her at some point recently, so probably. Pulp Fiction wasn't until 1994.
We really need to do So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Yeah, yeah, we got to put Kelly on the list.
Yeah, that managed. But
nobody picked it for January.
Almost my entire life without watching that movie, and you're going to make me watch that movie?
You haven't seen it?
It's actually a pretty good one.
Yes.
I've seen it.
I can't believe you people.
Thank you, Jason. Let's see. Isai Morales was in this. He played Ripper. If you don't know who Isai Morales is, he's done a lot of stuff over the years. I tried to look at his most notable credits to see where you might get a kick out of. One, I noticed he was Poppy on Dora the Explorer, but you know he's not physically in that. So I loved him as Joseph Adama on Caprica, which was a spinoff from the Battlestar Galactica series that came out last 20 years. Caprica was an amazing show, but it got like canceled after 2 seasons. And he was Deathstroke on Titans.
Wilson Slade.
Think about it.
Oh, my
God. That's him. And this, he had like the one eye patch.
Oh,
the sunglasses.
Damn it. One, I can't I believe it. I didn't see that.
I love the look on Jason's face.
Okay, I'm a massive Deathstroke fanboy, just to admit to it. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, moving right along. Grand L. Bush played Boone, which was Julie's kind of Boone companion, if you will. We've seen him in a few places over the years. I tried to pick a couple more fun ones. He was the Little Johnson in Die Hard, since you just mentioned it. I'll bring that one up. You know, Special Agent Johnson and Special Agent Johnson, no relation.
It was just Agent Johnson and Special Agent Johnson, yes.
And he was Balrog in the Street Fighter movie.
Oh, my God, Becky.
Which I'm sure he'd like to forget.
Wouldn't we
not
all?
Not the only one.
Still we were going. Talking about Jean-Claude Van Damme films.
Yep. Which was...
Can you believe they got Raul Julia into that shit?
That's true. It was actually that. I don't know if we should call that a Jean-Claude Van Damme. I mean, it actually felt like one at several times during the movie, but the rest of the times it didn't feel like a movie, so it was really hard to kind of... It was really hard to kind of figure.
It certainly didn't feel like a video game.
Oh, my God. Well, Raul Julia was great.
Yeah.
You know, because he was Raul Julia.
He was a wonderful thing that happened to that terrible movie.
You ever seen it?
No.
Yeah.
Ooh. I don't know if that deserves a kazoo.
I'm not really sure if that deserves a kazoo.
I think the kazoo was for the movie.
You see parts of it?
Which one?
That was funny. Okay. John Shea was Morgan. He was Lex Luthor in Lois and Clark. You remember that?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird choice. And one of my favorites was Frankie Faison was in this. He was the Eagle Man.
Eagle Man?
Yeah, he told the story.
Wow. Oh, the guy eating the river rat. Gotcha.
River rat man.
I got
that. I would have gotten.
I liked that
great.
Guy.
Great.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen an eagle flying back to his home with dinner for the missus and all the little eagle babies? And he's flying against the wind, and he's flying in rain, and he's flying through bullets and all kinds of hell. And then right at that moment that he's about to get back to his nest, he says, "Oh, what the fuck? It's a drag being an eagle." And right then, two little X's comes across his eyes, just like in the old-fashioned cartoons. And he goes plunging down and down and down. And bam! It's just a splatter of feathers. And then we don't have the national bird of America no more.
That was so beautiful.
Did you ever see that?
Have you ever seen that?
I could have kept rolling on that for another like 30 seconds. That was great.
That was a great scene.
Did
that
you get the bit about
fit
the
in
sauce?
The movie at all.
No, I'm not catching on. I can't make my do like, especially with just like a bit part like that. Do like a whole bunch of clips of the same guy.
Oh, but it was so good.
He was back then where I would have known him from. He was the landlord in Coming to America, which was a movie favorite of mine at the time.
Yeah,
I remember him. More recently, he was Pop on Luke Cage, which was a great role for him.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
who he
yeah.
is.
Yes, that's exactly it.
An interesting side, because I happen to see it in the middle of his credits somewhere, and if the actors were listening to the show, I'd want to make sure to embarrass them, since I'm obviously on a roll. He was the Lloyd in The Stupids. Just checking. Okay.
I think I can safely say that that is I've ever seen.
I'm going to pretend like I don't know what you're talking about.
That's good. It's good.
But I love that scene where he was the Lloyd, because I thought that was an awesome scene, and I do love that movie.
I knew you would. I feel so vindicated somehow. It's terrible. It's Tom Arnold. Terrible movie.
I want to watch it again now.
Mm. Tom Arnold did exactly one good movie. That wasn't it. box office looks like it had about a $30 million budget. I'm not sure where most of that went. I mean, there was some in the talent pool, obviously.
The cars.
Visual effects.
It went to the cars.
Cars. The action sequences were. And there was a lot to say. I guess, according to reports at the time of production and like some of the interviews with the cast and crew later on, the test screening was disastrous. And so the producer, Ronald Shusett, who we mentioned, he brought in to reshoot almost reshoot almost half the movie, add more character scenes and humor. Emilio Estevez said that the original director, Jeff Murphy, who has directing credit, let them down by focusing too much on action. And I feel like the action sequences are pretty spot on. Everything moved and paced well.
Some of the comedy took away from the feel of the movie, and that threw me off.
And it makes you wonder, because also we're talking test screenings with audiences in 1992.
Fair. Right? I was 4.
You know, or 91, I guess. This was in January. So, I mean, obviously what we wanted out of movies was very different at the time, too.
I can see that.
And we run into that a lot watching these older movies, you know, because we've been watching movies from the 80s and 90s. And you can tell that they are marketed to a very different audience than today's audience. Because what we want out of a film, even if it's supposed to be a comedy or a drama. We have different expectations out of that. You have to blend a lot more elements in very clever ways or very organic ways.
Put some nuance into it.
Yes. Yeah. Nuance. Good word. I don't know. I don't know though. I mean, I think that's worth a study, but I don't necessarily know that I'm qualified to make an estimation other than having been there at the time.
Fair.
But I was young. So not as young.
I was about to say, I was young too.
Free Jack only made $6.7 million its opening weekend, grossed $17.1 million. It was a box office bomb. It was hit with a lot of executive meddling. Extensive reshoots led to product which was trashed by critics and ignored by audiences. And frankly, nobody at the time wanted to watch this kind of movie. I thought it was fantastic when I saw it. And I'm pretty sure I saw it on, you know, HBO or video or something. But I was drawn by this point. I was pretty much drawn to star power too. I had actors I really liked, and this had a couple of them. I really enjoyed Anthony Hopkins after Silence of the Lambs. I really liked Emilio Estevez from the Young Guns stuff. And there was even a scene in this, and I know there's not a lot of Western fans in the room, so I don't know how many of you actually even seen the Young Guns movies, because they're quite a while back now. But there's a scene in this, because Emilio Estevez plays Billy the Kid. And there's a scene in this in the diner when he puts the gun on the table, and he, you know, the guy's, you know, giving him shit and threatening him. He puts the gun on the table and he lowers his head. He's got that hat on, which was actually supposed to be when they got it, they were trying to get a prop from the original Young Guns props, but apparently Lou Diamond Phillips had stolen the hat they wanted. He looked down, and then he looked up, and then that smile, that kind of half smile, that was Billy the Kid. That was a complete and obvious reference to what we just knew Emilio from at the time. Because if you think about it, it wasn't that it was necessarily out of character for Alex, but it was really kind of a weird choice right then.
Yeah, that entire scene was a weird choice for the movie.
Yeah, they got Brad dead, which was nice.
Fair. Brad needed to die because you... God, frankly, in the future, he was a dick character, but he was supposed to be.
He was a dick character in the present.
Oh, yeah. Remember our first meeting? Here we go.
Any careful planning for the future must include a little ass kissing. So come on, pucker up.
Did I oversell this kid, gentlemen?
I think not.
More than just the hottest rookie driver on the circuit. He's photogenic, he's telegenic, he's drug-free, and he's real good to his mom. Is that a face that'll sell motor oil or what? Speaks English, too. Say a few words to the nice people, Alex.
Hello, son. Champion Spark Plugs.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Plugs.
Love it. But he was terrible. Brad was terrible. I every time I hear his voice, though, I'm all like, Niagara Falls.
Slowly I turn.
No, not that. Sorry.
Next week.
Scrooged, yeah. Next week. I don't think it's next week. I think we're a couple. Is it next week?
Next week, Scrooged.
Dude. Oh, that's right, because we had to skip one. Yes. So we're moving stuff up. We got to put something else in there somewhere. It's holidays time. It's close enough.
Close enough. We're in December.
We're good. Fine. Gosh, I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun. Let's talk about that instead of this. So, no.
I'm in.
No.
You know, I've only seen the movie once. I wouldn't remember enough. Because I was really curious to see Steven Tyler acting.
I think you mostly watched this movie because we put it on the list for the show.
No, I'd seen this movie before.
Oh, originally. Steven Tyler wasn't in the movie.
Right.
Right. Are you really, really hanging on that, aren't you? It's the lips, man. Otherwise, nothing alike. And
it's true.
After seeing this, I think Mick Jagger's probably the better actor. Probably.
Oh, yeah. I still haven't seen Steven Tyler act.
I haven't either. Unless you kind of
haven't either.
Music videos.
Yeah. I really...
No, I've seen his daughter act.
I was really...
Oh, yeah.
Are you sure that she was acting? Because she's not great at it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, burn.
I like Liv Tyler.
I'm pretty sure you and I were thinking of different movies.
But I'm not going to say I love her for how great a deep an actor she is. I think she's good, but I don't necessarily think she's good at everything.
She's pretty, and that's about all she has going for her.
I thought in emotional
scenes.
She's
got her dad's lips.
she should give them back. Some of the more emotional scenes that she does in, like, Armageddon, in Lord of the Rings. I mean, some of the sequences she does where, you know, she gets emotional, she's so compelling. She
Maybe
has the ability to emote really strongly.
I don't see any emotion from her at all in the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Well, she's an elf. It's supposed to be nuanced.
And she isn't everything else she plays accent nuanced. Too.
That's what we're calling that. Okay. No, I'm joking.
No emotion at all.
Peter Jackson, this last week just released a project that was all footage that was filmed 50 years ago and is all the internet was talking about for a few days. That's nuance. Pretty good shit.
I apparently didn't look at the internet for a couple days.
No, and you wouldn't care. It's the Beatles.
I like the Beatles.
Oh, get back. You should check it out. It is all about the last year they spent together. Basically, oh, cool. They were working on the album for, well, not all about the last year. It was all about the making of Let It Be. And so they're in the studio for a few weeks getting ready for a live show. But it was during that last year. It was really, really great stuff, especially if you have any kind of hangups about the Beatles breaking up and your own theories about why and all that. It really, really changes the narrative a ton.
Cool.
And it's choking me up. No. Good stuff. Let's see. Just more clips. Let's see. Oh, I had to share. I loved the audio effects in this. Some of them were really, really bad. Let's see. High-tech sound effects. Zooming in on the race car. Just terrible stuff.
I liked it.
Not going to say anything.
I loved it. Lobotomizer.
Guess I didn't win, huh?
Guess I didn't win.
You still got brain function.
Oh, shit. Clamp him and get the lobotomizer.
Imagine the shit the spiritual switchboard give us if we delivered him like this.
40 megawatts to the prefrontal lobe. That should burn it clean.
Should quiet him down a bit, too.
What kind of hospital is this?
That lobotomizer was terrifying, just because if something that was wiggling around that much could actually drill into your head, you might not have a head left.
I don't think it needed to drill.
It would have had to make it through the skull.
It was like some sort of...
They were lobotomizing people randomly.
It was like electrical lobotomizing or something.
I think the electrical is what did it. Let's not focus on the props because this movie...
But here's the thing. Here's the thing that I think is interesting.
Wow.
Because any level of dystopian science fiction always does this because it's how you illustrate how bad it can be, right? And in this case... They were looking at a future where human life had lost its inherent value to such a degree that they were doing this, right? Pulling people out and instead of giving them let's use this technology to pull people out and give them a chance at life again. No, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to steal them.
Well, I mean, they had said the ozone layer was completely fried and everybody was sick because of nuclear fallout and stuff. So, yeah.
Look how violent all of society just was by nature in this.
I mean, welcome to every dystopian everything.
Well,
if you feel as a population that society doesn't care about you, you turn against society.
Exactly.
There were strippers wearing metal. It was definitely a dystopian future.
I love how in those types of – you always have things like this. Where the technology is reflective of that, right? So you get into this room where these doctors have this almost kind of, I use the term loosely, right? Because they're doctors, obviously. They're people
speeding down the highway at 90 miles an hour.
Right. And they're talking about like tools like the lobotomizer, which then gets like, I mean, just kind of wildly used in like just lobotomizing people left and right, obviously.
Sure, why not?
How the tech that they're using is so brutally persistent and invasive and decisive in the way it works. That when the hero gets a hold of it, it's used to extraordinary effect because it is far deadlier than anything you would find in a real hospital in a way that could be used that way. No safety measures, no hindrances to make it, just, you know what I mean?
No, you hit a button and it's doing the thing.
This is a dystopian thing, right?
You can lobotomize someone with bad aim halfway across the room on accident.
Take it all the way back to...
you can hit the broadside of a barn.
Logan's Run.
Yeah.
Remember the laser thing that they were doing to do the cosmetic?
Yeah.
It's like, wow. You just, kind of we'll just kind of push a couple buttons here and we'll just tear people to pieces instead of like, just.
And now there's weird thoughts of chasing somebody around with an X-ray gun.
I love that element. I think it's just a way that little way that something as simple as the technology reflects how bad all of society is around it.
Oh, yeah, the perception of technology.
Our audience know that this is the worst timeline. And they're wrong, scary. Of course. We have the worst timeline. But
that's the idea. That's the point, right? Let's see.
Well, we still don't have a lobotomizer, and it's like 10 years after that movie. 15.
More than 10.
Speaking of a machine,
we do have COVID, though.
You have the timing and movement of the retrieval convoy. Know anyone indulging in a little commerce on the side?
I don't. It's worth checking.
Sure is.
Step up. Come on, Victor. 12-13-27-51306. I never have, nor will I ever, divulge information outside of this organization to anyone. frankly, I'm surprised you would even test me.
I'm not testing you, Ripper. I'm testing the machine.
I love
it. And it works. I love this scene. I love this scene. The quiet, because he wasn't sinister. The syndic wasn't really sinister ever. He was dangerous.
He was trying to get a job done.
Although I just realized something.
What's that?
His name was Victor Vasindic.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it?
I love alliteration, and I did notice that, and it was great.
I also love, this is a good example of how, you know, I feel dirty kind of saying this about Mick Jagger. You get two actors who are really good at what they're doing in this sequence. And there's a certain kind of underlying tension that doesn't have to be part of the scene that makes it work so much better. And you miss some of it when I'm playing the audio clip because I compacted it a little bit to take out space and stuff. Because some of the way that the phrases would linger and it just the scene was really good. It had an underlying tension that I thought was really effective. And like I said, I like Isaiah Morales a lot. Jagger was great.
Just the pause between, I'm not testing you, I'm testing the machine.
And then it had some like little digital, I didn't capture it because it had some digital kind of ding. It's like a microwave going off. Yeah. And it works, you know. Test everyone. See, caviar.
Alex, what the hell are you doing with a piece on a table? Put that away.
You started.
Hey, you Marmaduke looking moron. You messing with my boy here? Mind your own business. You live longer. A limo is coming. In 5 minutes, it's out of the outhouse and into the penthouse.
Talk to Julie. Is she coming?
I didn't talk to Julie. Just her car. Besides, keep it zip, man. The friggin' word is out on you. The hell am I swilling this puke for? In 5 minutes, I'll be eating caviar.
Love Mr. Poindexter. He's so good. I was gonna say why did we see more stuff, but he was in a lot of stuff. He did a lot of stuff, but it was mostly just a little bit.
He was really good. He was
very strong character, but he was a very specific type of character. He could do well,
right?
So it was that delivery. Let's see. Okay, so this is one of those moments I was thinking of, like where you got. I have this image in my head of Mick Jagger just being this kind of silent threat who occasionally says something evocative with those lips, and just kind of like, you know, we just kind of intersperse that in there, and then you get scenes like.
Hey, Verlon, it's Vasindic. I hate to tell you this,
but it's speeding.
Where are we going?
Oh no, I hate the dark.
Piss off.
You can't get rid of me that easily.
Love the laptop flipping back open.
The banter was so good.
and quite possibly the best scene in the movie.
And it felt like they were having so much fun filming it. You know, right. Given the fact that their characters are, you know, mortally opposed at this point to whatever they're going to do. Good stuff.
One of the things that Vasindic says later when he's about to kill him, and he's like, I was really starting to get used to you. You don't often make friends in this line of work. That's right. I was just like,
Who said we were friends?
Who said we were friends?
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, then again, this kind of future, it's like your definitions obviously change a tad anyway. Right. Let's see. dickheads.
This Furlong paid you a visit, sister, and you gave him Brad Carter's address. Yes? Yes. And you haven't seen him since?
No.
Backhanded slap.
That's nun abuse.
Are you lying, sister?
Oh, the good Lord says to turn the other cheek. And he never really had to deal with dickheads like you.
I did enjoy that so much.
Her giggle made it worth.
She was so good. I was so excited to see she had a second scene.
Yes.
Hands down, my favorite nun in the entire movie.
It's the only one, but...
Oh, wow. Well, that just kind of... that's deep, kid. Mississippi.
I saved your life.
And I gave you the name you wanted. The name of Emma Cadness. Still, I'd hate you to think that I don't value my life highly. I'd give you a 5 minute start. One Mississippi. Two Mississippi.
I love that shot too, because they do the profile, because it could come from the back of Ascendic's head in that shot looking at Emilio Estevez, and then he turns his head sideways. You got that profile of his lips, one Mississippi, with his hand over his eyes.
So beautiful.
That's a good shot. So that was great. I loved their exchanges though. I thought that their relationship between Alex and Vicendic was one of the coolest things about the movie.
I don't know how they ended up being friends at the end though.
Quote unquote.
I don't get it.
Oh, I think it's about Nicolette mostly. Yeah, it's mostly about him.
The enemy of my enemy is not necessarily my friend, though.
I think in a dystopian future, it kind of is the closest
he gets. It's as close as you're going to get.
I don't think we could consider them friends.
They didn't kill each other.
That's because of Nicolette.
And had opportunities to a bunch of times.
He not only didn't take the shot when he could.
Right.
He saved the other guy's life.
Right.
Because they were all going, hey, Vicendic, and they were going to throw a bomb at him and blow him up when he came out and said, hey, assholes, blah, 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 blah. And then Vicendic could turn around and go, da, 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 and they killed the two people between them, and then they both took off their helmets, and they had this moment, and then they had that moment with the one Mississippi, and they had the banter on the car, which was kind of fun. And then Vicendic's biggest problem was with authority.
Mm-hmm.
And he had Micolette treating him like a jerk. Yeah. He wasn't going to pay him.
Yeah.
He was going to fire him and send him out on the streets with nothing and after win. All the work that he
had. And win.
Yeah.
And Michaelis gets the transfer. He gets his money, but there's still this dick in charge, because we can only assume that McCandless was a dick.
And I think at this point, all that makes sense because he and Furlong have developed some level of mutual respect. So
respect
he is thinking he was
is still hard.
He was thinking of Alex as a person by this point.
Okay.
And so what McCandless is doing suddenly becomes a lot less acceptable, particularly since he's doing it all villainy.
Well, I mean, and at that point, he was at the end of his time frame anyways. He wasn't going to get paid regardless.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever his reasons, obviously. Yeah. He's like, you know, we'll just go ahead and roll with this. Worked for him, obviously. I think in the long run, if you were to extend this naturally beyond the scope of this story, I don't think it's a friendship anyway. I mean, despite his weird comment that I'd even forgotten about, you mentioned it. I think this was would have been a point of leverage. In the long run, this would have been a point which Vicendic had this to hold over whatever Alex
McCandless
and Julie did from that point forward, yeah. Making sure that he got
his cut.
His cut of whatever, you know, that he was treated well.
I knew you'd make a mistake.
I love that.
There's other issues if you think about beyond the scope of it, though, too, because the story doesn't work after that point.
No, it doesn't.
We've had our hero accomplish his thing of surviving into this, but he has now entered into this situation where he is now the head of the company that owns the spiritual switchboard. Is he really going to continue to run a company that promotes capturing other free jacks and putting them in the hands of other customers?
And can he really stop it?
Yeah, and if he stops it, does that destroy his business in
the
process?
Does the spiritual switchboard even work after all the explosions that were up there?
It's not that that's not a point, but technology can always be, I mean, once you've developed it, it can always be rebuilt. Delivery. Was this, I think this might have been Nicolette.
He's been dead almost 3 days now. Old Mac really didn't have much time to organize all this. His mistake was asking me to carry it out. McCandless snatched you. He wants your body. Needs it quite badly at this point. The way I figure, he has less than an hour on the switchboard before his brain is irretrievable.
How do you suppose you're going to deliver me to him?
I have absolutely no intention of delivering you to him. Nobody's being delivered to McCandless.
Yeah. I am, by the way, in case you hadn't caught up to this point, the big bad villain right now. And intend to be the only villain left when this is over. I mean, yeah, I love his delivery. I also love the way he said brain. anyway, McCandless.
So you see, Joel, once the consciousness transfer has been accomplished, a fait accompli, so to speak, only then would I have revealed to you my new self.
Why do it at all, Mac?
Because I love you, Joel. I've loved you for years, from the first day I saw you. It became painfully clear there was nothing I possessed, no power, no wealth, no position. Nothing that could make you feel for me what I felt for you. But I held out hope that with enough time, somehow I could reach your heart. When my time ran out, I became ill. I was dying.
Okay, so I can't hold this part in anymore. Her options are her boss, who's probably, what, 20 years older than her, or her boyfriend from almost 20 years ago.
Or, the whole plan was to have both of those in the same package, her boss in her boyfriend.
Which is still gross, no matter how you look at it. I can't hold that in. I can't condone any of that.
The assumption here, of course, is that the relationship that they had previously
could just
is enduring.
Pick up like a freaking cup.
Is enduring, and obviously, years. I mean, obviously, in the construct of the story, you see her doubting that, not believing it's logical at all.
Should be doubting that.
In the end, she's making a choice when she has no other choices.
And keep in mind, this isn't like a relationship that broke up 20 years ago. He died. She saw him explode.
Yes, she's already mourned it, moved on with her life, mm-hmm. And then he comes back in, just like, well, it was 2 days ago for me. Oh, okay.
No, not oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right.
She was going to put him on a boat to the middle of nowhere just so he could live, because she even said, if I asked you to come away with me the day before your big race, what would you have said? No. Yeah,
she contextualized it. I have a wife now.
It still ended up together.
She slept with him first, but that was also, part of the story.
Well, now she gets to be... This works out for her a lot better because she gets to coach him on how to be her boss, and she gets to be really in charge. She's going to be the power behind the strings running this billion-dollar company, which is what she wanted to begin with, because she was asking McCandless for a promotion, and she was jockeying around the vice president, who was actually next in line, by pulling those mucky trades.
Okay, I buy that, but there are still way too many relationship threads, and I don't like them.
Well, that's fair.
Again, you don't have to like the way this rolls out, because she didn't have any choices.
She did. She could pick anyone else on the planet.
No, I mean, after this sequence of events started to unroll, she ended up where she ended up because she wasn't going to completely turn her back on him regardless. And then they end up in front of McCandless, and then McCandless ends up forcing the situation. In fact, until she got in the car and they were on the way down the street, she still thought McCandless had won, and she felt like she had no choice. You know, you're doing what I'm telling you to do.
So now she's in a forced relationship until the rest of her life.
Well, or until she gets away from whatever.
Old boyfriend's
body. As long as she's in his building and surrounded by security, she the hell is. So, yeah, it's a bad situation, but in the end, it works out the best it can.
Works out is such a bad phrase.
But again, a lot of this movie doesn't work beyond the scope of this story.
Again, yeah.
You know, that's why the story ends where it does. This is the happy ending, well, as long as you end it here.
And even that being said, it really is only for him.
Mostly, yes.
Yeah, Alex is the only one winning at the end of this
movie. Well, I mean, technically you could say Vicendic turns out in a better situation than he started, but...
And she probably did too. She didn't know McCandless was a creep. But
right.
If he had plummeted with his plan, it would have been a worse situation for her in life, obviously.
Right.
Because he expected a lot of her that she didn't want to give and would have, extolled with Alex's body in the process, mm-hmm.
So Alex won and everyone else got the best out of a bad situation.
That's pretty much correct.
Oh, yeah.
Including the viewer.
Except for the people who died, which were all people we mostly
wanted. They deserved
it.
Okay, we've definitely overanalyzed that. How about the transfer?
Except nice try, Mark. I made it. I completed the transfer.
Don't you give me that shit.
Shoot him, Vicendic. Tried to assassinate me.
Take orders from a free jack?
Who is he?
There were 22.762 seconds of transfer before it blew offline.
Is he McCandless?
Damn it, of course I'm McCandless.
Could be. We've completed transfers in that time, and we've had them take longer. I don't know. I think Mr. McCandless will have to identify himself.
And here we come to the crux of the situation. Because in fictional 2009, everybody obviously has a personal identification number that only they would know, but can be verified by somebody reading it off a screen.
513-273.
Just going to throw that out there? Oh, that wasn't yours, was it? That was... Oh, yeah. Never mind.
I assumed that the arrangement was a security arrangement he had with his team anyway. It was something the corporate was doing, not something everybody was doing.
I would assume that they would have some way of verifying free jack transference, and that would probably be like a security code that you created to verify that you transferred to the
other. That's good. Those are both good.
That would be a code
free jacks are a thing.
when you sent him an instruction so that he knew he wasn't getting an instruction from some other person
pretending to be the guy you hired. Rather than being some sort of society-wide thing, this is
It was a security protocol.
Yeah, I can buy it security.
I saw narrow scope on that.
That works. That works for me. Okay. I could have ended with that and been fine. I was like, it's not particularly uplifting, so I thought I'd go ahead and
end it. I watched you, you'd make a mistake. Candace can drive. You'll have to coach him better than that, Miss Redland.
Alex, is that you?
Nibble my ear. For luck.
Wait a minute, how'd you get the ID number right?
He didn't. I lied. He wasn't even close.
Are we really gonna do this?
Stranger things have happened. Now come on, buckle up. Let's see what this baby will do.
Oh, God.
That was
that was my really, favorite
really
line.
Terrible, but oh God, he was so good at it.
Such a syrupy, drippy line.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
So good.
Smarm.
Yes, smarm. That's exactly it.
All right, thumbs up, thumbs down. Rich, you ready?
Okay. Thumbs down. I had not seen this before.
I also consider that a thumbs down.
And I did not see it when any of those hairstyles would have been in fashion.
You've got to be kidding me. Are you trying to sell me on the idea that there was a point in time when some of those hairstyles would have been in fashion?
Oh, I'm not sure on some of those.
Yeah, okay, so this is a dystopian thing, right? I mean, we saw this in Demolition Man. We saw it in the Hunger Games. Look at what they did in the Hunger Games.
No, okay.
Oh, my God.
All right. I grew up during the New Wave thing.
That's fair.
I could deal with some of that. Some of the other more pedestrian versions of hairstyles that throw me. But that being said, it's a soft dislike, but I guess I'm going to put in, if you go back and watch this visually, very dated. To counter that on my thumbs up, though, one of my complaints has always been when we go just a little bit in the future and they make these grand animations of things in ways that things would never work, even if we were given 2,000 years to make them work that way. You'd have to be in some sort of virtual AI environment to even come close. And the tech was suitably muted. It took me a while to figure out what's happening in Extraction because there wasn't all this overlay pointing everything out. Maybe I would have liked just a minute of exposition, but whatever. Exposition slows it down anyway, and it wasn't something the market was going to put up with at that time. So I did. I liked the way the transfer came across on the screen. I liked the way the little shocking electric thing for the mind wipe goes, and that was consistent with how they were going to mind wipe up in the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked all the bits. And they went future, but they didn't visually try to take it super future for just 12 years. I mean, because we're visually not that much different than we were 12 years ago now, although we stay at home a lot more.
That's not a bad thing.
No, right. Right, not mad. So in balance, at the end of the day, I did like the way they did the visual stuff because they didn't overdo that. It's an interesting movie. I loved the plot. I loved the way it worked out. The twists, many of them were highly telegraphed, but I still enjoyed it. I'm giving it 4 stars. I didn't absolutely love it, but it was enjoyable, and I'm glad I got an opportunity to watch it at the end of the day.
So for a first viewing, it came out pretty well for you then. That's really cool.
I don't know that I wouldn't say no to watching it again, but I don't know that I'd go out of my way to hunt it down and watch it.
That's fair. Okay. Vanessa, what do you think?
Realistically, I don't have a lot of thumbs downs on this one. I loved the music. I loved the setting. I loved most of the characters. Mm-hmm. If they would have just left out that last line for nibble on my ear, I would have even been able to imagine that there wasn't a relationship there and she was just coaching him. And it would have been fine. That one line completely obliterated the ending for me.
I liked it as a proving callback, but I get your
point. Which is the only reason they did it.
It's the only reason I would have accepted that line.
Yeah.
I get that. It still irritated me.
I didn't like the line. I didn't like it when it was first said, and I didn't like it when it was called back.
And it wasn't, I mean, as a callback, it was obviously an incidental callback. It wasn't like it was a saying of his or something like they do with some types of shows.
Yeah.
It was something he literally had said to her 3 days before. and could
or 12 years
and knew that it stood out because when he said it, she was like, "What is wrong?" Yeah, I mean, she had a weird reaction at the time. She's like, "She'll remember this."
She had an appropriate reaction.
She had an appropriate reaction.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's fair.
But realistically, that's my biggest thumbs down. Everything else about this movie, I loved. I would still give it 4 stars and watch it tomorrow and just not watch the last, like, 2 minutes.
That's good. Jason, what do you think?
Oh, I am seriously conflicted on this one because it is such a good, bad movie.
Yeah, it is.
But it is such a bad, good movie.
It is.
And I really wish I could have 2 votes because the part of me that watches movies wants to give it 1 star. Because it's a bad movie. But God, do I love it for some asinine reason that I cannot put my finger on. Yes. Maybe it's Mick Jagger's charisma. Maybe it's the fact that, you know, Anthony Hopkins is just drippy and
diabolical.
Right? He's so Hopkins-y.
Anthony Hopkins is Anthony Hopkins.
And John Banks is so evil. And, you know, not even talking about Buster Poindexter and Rene Russo and Emilio Estevez. There's something about this film that just works.
The characters are strong and alive.
It shouldn't. And even though it's dated, and even though there's the pew pew laser blasters going on all over the place.
Yes!
But I think what it really boils down to is that car chase with the champagne truck when they're bantering back and forth on the thing. I wish you had gotten more of that because it just kept going. How am I driving? Actually, pretty good.
He was a race car driver, of course.
Which was a callback to when he was watching the tape going, hey, that guy's pretty good.
Watching
the bottles fall out of the truck. I liked the last turn where the last 3 bottles fell.
Yes.
To make it clear that he has gotten rid of all the champagne.
Even
now.
The end of that sequence, if he drinks any of that, I'm out of a job.
The river water.
Yes.
The river water.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I'm out of a job. Yeah. So good. And I don't want to like this movie because it's not a movie you should like, but
it's fine.
It gets 4 stars.
Yes! Love it. Kid, before he changes his mind, what do you got?
It falls to me then.
Oh, come on. I know you enjoyed this movie.
It is absolutely my favorite Steven Tyler, Michael J. Fox movie of all time.
Yes!
Considering that there are no movies with Steven Tyler and Michael J. Fox in them, I feel like that's saying something.
Dang it.
That's the best description I could have possibly even gone with.
It does have time travel.
There are parts of this movie that are just absolutely cringe worthy. I mean, really, seriously. But oh my God, watching it again after all these years, I remember exactly how much I loved it the first time I saw it. I was so sold on this movie the first time I saw it. The entire philosophical idea that the movie is based on was just beautiful to me because, you know, this was where I was introduced to that kind of messing with your mind sort of thing. I'm sure there were movies I'd seen before that I just didn't get element to it.
That's one of the things, the questions of identity and, like I said, I mentioned Total Recall, which came out the same year.
Yeah.
And has some of that sort of mind. But a lot of the stuff we've seen in sci-fi since draws roots from stories like this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think Free Jack may have been one of those influential films that just nobody really thinks about because it was such a failure at the time. But all the stuff with the transhuman element, you know, the storing a mind in a computer,
yes.
All those things.
The spiritual switchboard. And there's nothing spiritual about it at all.
Just really great. And the time-space thing, you know, Millennium was the one I think came out before this.
It's a time travel movie that doesn't actually have time travel in it.
Right, exactly. It's good stuff. Anyway.
Just
nailed it.
Yeah. I do have to pick on a couple of things, though. Officially, we have to do a thumbs down, right?
Please.
You were talking about how they didn't overdo the tech. And for the most part, I agree with you, except that the one way in which they did overdo the tech was so egregious that it seriously tainted my enjoyment rewatching this movie.
It was the vid phones.
No, it was the vehicles.
Oh, they were weird looking.
You said, you know, they had a $30 million budget. Where did the money go? And me and Richard both said the cars. Okay, the cars were an atrocity in this movie. The fact that they actually thought that that is what cars were going to look like.
That's just design. Yeah, that's
once you go dystopian, though, things fall apart because you no longer have certain corporations defining all the vehicles. You know, like when they were people making them at home.
When they were riding in the cars, like her more luxury car, it was still very... It kind of felt like a tank in the fact that you weren't exposed anywhere. You know, everything had that kind of security, kind of major quality built into it. I thought was interesting and appropriate given the society. Except the champagne truck, which was great.
They kept having, and I'm sure they only had one of them, and they just kept driving it through the scenes from different directions, that little train car looking thing.
I don't remember it. Not picturing it.
Okay. It was a Metro.
Somebody has to know what I was. Yeah. It had three or four cars on it that were had like a rubber hinged things so that they could go around turns or whatever. That thing was just absolutely terrifying to me. I don't know why, but I kept thinking it was like this giant tech worm snake thing that was just cruising through downtown. And I
that's
like
kind of what it was.
And it was.
And it was.
it was like public
it was
transit.
Eat people. Yeah. I hated that thing.
Which is also appropriate for public
transit. They have buses and trains like that.
I don't know if I believe you. I really don't.
I've ridden on them.
I mean, I can believe they have railed vehicles like that. That was actually
the
thing.
No, I've been in a bus with little seats and the little turny parts. So you like the little seats float above the turny parts as the things kind of flip around. Oh, yeah, it's fun.
Oh, yeah.
We do live in the middle of nowhere.
Where do you go to find, anyways?
A city with people in it.
With more people than Wichita.
I'm adjacent to a city with people in it, I'll have you know.
More than Wichita.
Not Wichita people. More people.
Other than that, the other big thing that got me, and no, you mentioned the hairstyles. I have to get on that. There is a scene where Jules has this hair that is as wide as her head on either side of her head. And the first time we see that, I like would have stopped the movie if I'd been holding the remote. I was like, this is a movie made in the 90s, pretending it's set in the 2000s. Where do they get off having 80s hairstyles?
Yeah.
So hair is a constant problem in science fiction. A constant problem. You could go even like with space opera with like Star Wars.
Star Wars. We have
feathered hair. You know, because they made it in the 70s, that's the way they think it's going to proceed to be from that point forward. It's everybody's hair is feathered. I mean,
Logan, but that
Logan's
happened.
We mentioned Logan's Run, Michael York.
Right.
Star Wars Logan's was a long time ago.
Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah, Star Wars was a long time ago.
Yeah, this was originally
in
the 70s.
Galaxy far, far away.
Yes, and they had 70s hair.
But it was still movies supposed to be a long
it
time ago
in the
galaxy
a long
time
ago.
Right. And what I'm saying is they're when you are, okay, you're making a movie that is supposed to be in a completely different time, place, paradigm, that has nothing to do with Earth, and they have 70s hair.
But as the wheel turns, the wheel wills.
Just you get off of me about
No, I feel like that's a valid pull because, you know, the hairstyles in Wheel of Time do not in any way, shape, or form look like they are taken from, you know, our time. They've done a really good job
They're
of fixing
that. They're
pulled
from a lot of cultures.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
And she hasn't even read the books yet.
Right? I've listened to 20 chapters of the first book.
That's enough. That counts. But no, you're right. This is a recurring problem in a lot of, and it's more in older movies. It still happens to a smaller degree, I think. But you had mentioned the Hunger Games,
mm-hmm. which is, I mean, obviously it's endemic.
It's pulled straight from the books.
It's the author huge in the books, even.
Yeah,
like it is a major focus of the book.
And they did that very well
and
in the movies.
It was done great. Yeah, it was fantastic.
But you're right. It didn't look like 80s hairstyle. It was just flamboyant and out there.
And it wasn't just 80s. It was 80s music video hairstyles.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's what you get for having Steven Tyler in your movie. I'm not sure. But
to be fair, there's only so many things you could do with hair.
You got a point.
I don't have hair.
Many of them, Steven.
That's one of the things.
That would be something you're missing. Yes.
You do have hair. It's just not on top of your head.
Oh,
okay, fair enough. And I've completely lost my train. It's gone.
Is it goatee? Just a mohawk?
It's okay, it had this hairstyle for your kind face. Of quality
it's
of moving through.
It's a mohawk for
the,
your chin. Yes.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. All things considered, I don't even remember what my specific thumbs up were. It doesn't matter. I thoroughly enjoy this movie. I am going to give it 4.5 stars. It is not a perfect movie, but it is about as close as most movies will ever get on my card.
5 stars, Rich. All right, that's Free Jack. happy to look at that. No. See what that makes our total look like.
It actually
how
brings,
much do you regret it, Jason?
Brings it up to 4.25. Get some popcorn.
Weird.
Find 2 hours, sit down and watch it if you haven't watched it.
I can't believe we got this one.
If you think this number is completely off base, contact us at feedback@prismatictsunami.com and let us know, or join us on our Discord and tell us where we messed this up.
Where Kinder Major let us know.
It was my fault.
No, absolutely beautiful. Because you could have ended up with a high rating in the group, you know, comparatively too. I mean, even with that.
Oh, I knew better.
I wanted to dislike this movie, and I couldn't. I actually enjoyed. I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the way it did, and I enjoyed
this is
the
not
acting
a movie
was beautiful.
I expected this. This was not a movie I expected this in. This is not the film I would have pegged as we're going to get that suddenly strangely high score. We've had a few movies where I thought we were going to, and we didn't. And some of those are Jason's fault.
Some of them are my fault also.
Yes.
One of them might be my fault.
You guys are all very, very good at breaking down how you feel and getting it out there. And that's what matters. When we come together on something like this, we're just a sample, you know. But we are a sample with broad tastes and criticisms. And so I feel like it works really well. This was, as you get around to it, a surprisingly fun movie to watch. And sometimes it is hard to pin down why. And those are actually some of my favorite kinds of movies sometimes.
I know 90% of it's the acting.
That I can't disagree. And again, as long as you pair that with a good story and a decent script, you've done a lot of the work. Everything else is in presentation, right? And the presentation was decent. It was fun. It was just fun. So
I'm gonna recant slightly on one thing. I am really glad that this had Mick Jagger in it instead of Steven Tyler.
I appreciate that.
But I wish it had had
really
Michael J.
Enjoy
Fox.
Him.
What's next, Vanessa? Oh, we already talked
Scrooged.
About doing
Scrooged.
So excited to finally do this. We wanted to do it last year, and they pulled it from streaming. So this year, we decided, screw it, we'll rent it. All right, everybody, watch it before next week, and we'll talk about it. Looking fun to tearing that one apart. Bill Murray, man.
Yes.
And Buster Poindexter,
and a bunch of people, bunch of cast,
so many people.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get out of here. Sorry, can't wait.
Who was the NPC?
Don't worry about it. We'll get it figured out. Oh, who was it?
The Nun.